shot. The next mile to break sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters above and not like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator, and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And before you leave that page, just do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcast on Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends. And also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace in our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting articles and lectures and classes by both professors on the continent and in the diaspora. A lot of different variety on the Time for Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Check it out. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:09 in the city of Philadelphia. We're using a Freestyle Friday mode on Time for an Awakening, and we'll always take your calls in that vein. But we're going to have a little special guest share with us this evening, Brother Zimbikwe Bambada of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, their branch here in Philly. He'll be here to talk about some of the initiatives that the brothers and sisters are doing there and some things going on at the Malcolm X Park here in Philadelphia at 152nd Street. We'll talk to our guests in a moment after we return from a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm trying to get used to this little quick chill here. You know, Elliot, I must be a misplaced weatherman. You know, it seems like I always got open up with the effect of the weather on me. But but I've been you know, this week has been an interesting week. You know, in just the kind of you know, public supposedly news events that's going on that is, to me, speaks to the nature of African people, as far as one being about narrative. And I understand the number 45 is once again bringing up about citizenship. So the whole question of, you know, the 14th Amendment is being brought up to issue, which goes to, you know, why our discussion with Brother Sabukwe Mbatha tonight from the Malcolm X Grassroots Committee is kind of important in relationship to continuing our discussion about political formation locally and nationally and internationally under these conditions.
You know, it should be an interesting discussion. I know some things going on in that area of Malcolm X Park. Brother Bombardo will probably be able to share a lot of information, especially with the local audience of Philadelphia that is listening about what's going on there. And similar things is going on in other cities with movements by other people to try to extinguish any fires of learning or movement among the people. It's always counter movements going on by other folks. And we have to educate ourselves to what's going on and develop strategies and counter moves to try to cut some of these things off at the pass instead of reacting after these things are done. Let's bring in our guest. I think he's with us on the line, Richard, Brother Zimbukwe Mbatha. Brother Mbatha, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How you brothers doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to have you on Time for Awakening with myself, Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Yeah, Brother Mbatha, before we kind of get started and talk about some things happening, some things that the group has been doing, talk about yourself a little bit. How did you get involved? Now, this is a chapter organization of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement here in Philadelphia. Understand, yeah. It's a branch of some things that was going on in Jackson. That's interesting because we had some guests on in the past that was heavily involved in that movement down there, the Jackson Cooperative. But talk about the genesis of the organization and your involvement here in Philadelphia.
Well, basically we're going to be talking about the two different lines of development that have kind of converged, and I'll talk about that because I'm a relatively new member of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement.
Okay.
So, you know, I've been a long time participant in the Black Liberation Struggle, you know. I'll talk about myself briefly, personally.
Okay.
In the process, I'll talk about why it is over the last few years, you know, I've decided to become involved in the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement.
Okay.
You know, basically, you know, I've been involved in the Black Liberation Struggle for about 30 years, you know. I was born here in Philadelphia. I wasn't raised here. I was raised down south in Florida and Georgia, you know. And I became involved in the Black Liberation Struggle. You know, I'm a member of probably what you would call the hip hop generation. You know what I'm saying? As I came of age, you know, and I experienced some of the things that our Black youth continue to experience, you know, and I think particularly, you know, police harassment and police violence, you know, I caught that heavily, you know, as a Black youth, you know, coming up in Tampa, Florida, in particular, you know, and can recall, you know, several incidents and several confrontations with the police that kind of radicalized me as a youth, you know. Seeing friends brutalized, being brutalized by the police myself, seeing friends brutalized, incarcerated, you know, as teenagers, sent to prison as teenagers, you know. At an early age, you know, I just began looking for answers, you know, looking for ways to respond.
Okay.
And in the process, you know, as a youth, you know, I was heavily influenced by Public Enemy, you know, was a, you know, an enthusiastic fan of Chuck D, you know, and in the process of, you know, just trying to navigate the pitfalls and traps of being a young black male, you know, you know, having friends who were incarcerated as teenagers, got my hands on literature, you know, developed by the black liberation struggle that some of my friends got in jails and prisons, you know. And in that process, you know, I got involved in the black liberation struggle, you know. Now, as I said, I've only been a member of the black of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, you know, for, you know, a little over a year.
Okay.
And then I've been aware of the work of the Malcolm X grassroots movement probably almost since it's founded. I was in a different group, you know, and involved in different groups over the years. I saw the Malcolm X grassroots movement involved in work around political prisoners. You know, I saw the Malcolm X grassroots movement involved in work around police brutality. You know, I was involved in similar work in similar with similar groups. The thing that really made me decide to join the Malcolm X grassroots movement is the work that it's been doing in Jackson, Mississippi, you know, over the last several years. And I consider that really significant work. And I consider it, you know, really, you know, people talk about, you know, we find ourselves confronted with a lot of different problems in our communities. And they're not new problems. They're problems that we've been facing, you know, in various different ways and forms for the 400 or 500 years that we've been oppressed here in America. You know, we talk about police brutality, you know, miseducation, you know, inferior education, you know, poverty, you know, violence on many different levels, you know, violence from the state, you know, violence from white terrorist organizations, violence amongst ourselves, you know. The work that the Malcolm X grassroots movement has been doing in Jackson, Mississippi, you know, in my opinion, it's work that's really develop a plan, a blueprint, something tangible, something that black communities throughout this country can take, analyze, you know, and kind of shape to fit and respond to the particular problems that we're confronted with where we are. And at the same time, you know, it's work that really can clarify the overall objectives of what our movement should be concretely, you know? I'll talk about that and kind of, you know, give a little bit of background. Around 2009, the late Chokwe Lumumba, who is one of the founders of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, and he's also one of the founders of an organization called the New African People's Organization.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected to city council in Jackson, Mississippi, right? And this electoral victory was the culmination of over 40 years of work, movement activists, you know, people involved in what's called the New African Independence Movement. What is the New African Independence Movement? You know, what are we talking about when we talk about New Africa? Basically, you know, in the 1960s, you know, we saw our movement evolve from a struggle for democratic rights, you know, and we remember, you know, black folks marching, you know, marching to be able to have the right to vote down south. And, you know, we remember, you know, black folks, you know, being threatened with terror, lynchings, murder, you know, for the right to vote, right? And, you know, it's, you know, people remember black folks down south. You know, we remember Emmett Till, you know. We remember Medgar Evers, you know. We remember these activists and these black folks down south being terrorized. One, just because we existed. Two, because we attempted to organize to fight back against this terror. We remember, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott. You know, we remember all of these things, you know what I'm saying? And at a certain point, you know, our movement evolved into a conscious struggle for power. Yeah, rights weren't good enough anymore. It wasn't good enough just to have the right to vote, the right to, quote unquote, have an equal education. You know, that we had to have power over our own lives, and, you know, and that power was defined by certain organizations that evolved during the late 60s, which were part of the Black Power movement. It became defined as national liberation, that just like you had other peoples around the world who were oppressed by European domination, white domination, who were fighting for independence. Because you remember in the 60s, there were about 30 states. By 1960, about 30 different states in Africa became independent from white domination and colonial rule. And that impacted our struggle, the struggle of black people here in America. You know, we saw the Cuban Revolution. We saw the Vietnamese resistance, you know. We saw all kinds of people around the world fighting back against white domination. And they weren't talking about fighting for integration. You know, as we remember Malcolm's speeches, the struggle of the Algerian people wasn't for integrated lunch power. The struggle was for land. It was for independence. And so basically, out of this process, a group called the Republic of New Africa was formed in 1969 in Detroit. The Republic of New Africa, it asserted that the struggle of black people had to culminate in the independence of South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana in an independent state for black people, right? That it wasn't just enough that we didn't want to, that our struggle wasn't to go to school with white people, but to run our own schools in our own independent nation. You know, our struggle wasn't to integrate into white people's neighborhoods, but to have our own nation, right? And the logic behind what was called the RNA, the logic behind, you know, these five states in the South was where the concentration of black people in America was. It continues to be to this day. If you look at the demographics in America, you see that today, you know, the U.S. Census will say that Mississippi is 40% black. In reality, if you go to Mississippi, you see, if you just do your own observation, it's probably majority black. You know, The same thing with Louisiana and South Carolina, you know. And if you look at the reality, even if you look at the politics in America, right, and you wonder why, like, you know, the basis, you know, we talk about Democrats and Republicans, and as Malcolm X said, you know, you're talking about, you know, in the Democrats, you got a wolf in sheep's clothing, right? Who pretend to be the friends and the liberals, the allies of black people. That continues to exist to this day, right? You know, with the Republicans, of course, you know, you go and you find out, how is it that Mississippi, a state which probably has a black majority today, right? 50 years after the Voting Rights Act, right? 50 years later, how is it that a state like Mississippi, which is probably majority black, where the, you know, you could probably count the black Republicans in Mississippi on one hand, right? But it's a Republican-controlled state, you know? This is the logic that you know, the key to a revolution in America, right, is the South. Because the South continues to be the poorest region in America because it has the largest concentration of black people. It continues to be the state where, you know, the majority of social violence, repression, the least amount of education, the least amount of economic and social development exists. And it's because of the legacy of slavery. It's because it's where the majority of black people continue to live, you know, and it continues to be also the prop that all of the anti-democratic and reactionary forces use politically to consolidate and wield power through the electoral system today. That's the reality, you know? So, you know, for 40 years, you know, so the RNA was founded in Detroit, you know, 1969. It's, you know, just in terms of giving a little background and you know, helping people understand some of the things that, you know, historically significant. One of the early, during the early phase of the RNA, you know, at Aretha Franklin's father's church, one of the key founding, you know, one of the key meetings that took place during the RNA's formative period, the police attacked that church, and it was a shootout at Aretha Franklin's father's church, you know. Later on, the RNA decided that it was time to take its politics into the South, that it was, you know, that it had to actually begin to build a base down South. And it decided to go into Mississippi in the late 60s. And it went down into Mississippi. And as soon as it went down into Mississippi, the government attacked, you know, the RNA down South. And 11 of its members, you know, during that attack, another military assault on our movement, just like the assassination of Fred Hampton, the assassination of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, the military assaults against the Black Panthers throughout this country. They also attacked the RNA. 11 of its members went to prison, including its initial provisional president, Amario Bedelli. But the RNA survived. It continued to work in Mississippi. You know, Chokwe Lumumba, on the basis of that 40 years of work, in a region that the RNA defined as Kush. Now, the significance of this, you know, the Chokwe Lumumba being elected to city council and then mayor in Jackson, Mississippi, was the culmination of a plan called the Jackson-Kush Plan. Kush is a region in Mississippi that the RNA, it called it Kush. It considered it, you know, the center of its strategy because these were 18 counties, contiguous. You know, by contiguous, that means you can go from one county to the next, right? You go from one county, just like you go from Philadelphia County to Bucks County. You can go from Philadelphia to County to Montgomery County, to Bucks County, to Delaware County, to Chesterwood County, right? And and these are contiguous counties, right? The same thing in Mississippi. And there are 18 counties that are contiguous, that are majority black. And they began organizing in this region, and 40 years later, Chokwe Lumumba was elected to city council. 4 years after that, he was elected to mayor, right? And the plan was is that these 18 counties would be the basis of, you know, the nucleus of a Republic of New Africa, where black people would organize for independence, for power, for liberation, for self-determination, based on various different grassroots community initiatives, you know? And so I was aware of this. You know, I've been involved in various different groups. I've always been involved in black liberation politics since I was a teenager, you know? And I've seen the Malcolm X grassroots movement, seen the New African People's Organization, which started the Malcolm X grassroots movement. What made me join was how I saw the Jackson Kush plan unfold in the process of these struggles after Chokwe got elected to city council and then mayor, you know? And this plan, this strategy, it was built on five pillars. Three of them, you know, I'll talk about, and because I think they're very relevant to Philadelphia. The first of these, you know, that's probably the key part of this strategy is what are called People's Assembly, you know, and the People's Assemblies, they are basically, you know. In a sense, you can call them town hall meetings, I guess, but they're more than that because these are decision-making bodies that we call the people to come to in the community, where the people can come to discuss the issues that affect it, can make decisions on what they would do, can hold their leaders accountable. And these are institutions. These are permanent institutions, permanent bodies. So when Chokwe was running for city council, he ran, the first thing they did in Jackson was they formed People's Assembly, you know, throughout the black community. And what's significant about Jackson also is, you know, Jackson is about between 80% and 85% black, you know, itself. You know, the city of Jackson, which is the capital of Mississippi, you know, and they formed People's Assemblies. They were able to adopt and ratify an agenda at these People's Assemblies that would push forward a bold program for, you know, to advance electoral power, you know, that people would come together. Like, yeah, I say, for example, here in the city of Philadelphia, we got black elected officials. We've had black mayors. We don't have a black mayor now. We've had black mayors. We've seen nothing get done for black people. We got the majority of the city council, not the majority. I don't think we have, you know, we don't have a majority black city council, but the largest group on the city council is black. But black people are the poorest people in Philadelphia. You know, you look at the statistics, show we comprise 45% of the population, but only control 2.5% of the businesses in this city. That's despicable, you know? What are these black elected officials doing for our community? Well, you know, they don't have to do anything because basically our communities, they're not accountable to our communities. They're accountable to the Democratic Party committee that puts together the machinery to get them elected, tells them what to say, tells them what to do. You know, and our community is totally disorganized, totally out of a process. What they did before they got, how they were able to get Chokwe elected, you know, is they organized people. They organized the people and brought the people out to vote. You know, if you look at any election in Philadelphia that happens, you see that, you know, probably about 15% of the eligible voters are participating in an election at any given time. You know, they transformed that situation in Jackson and brought everyday people out to the polls because they were organizing them continuously. And the People's Assemblies became an institution, you know, that to hold politicians accountable, to basically adopt policies for the politicians, you know, to implement.
Now, Brother Bambada, that's what I want to kind of talk about, because we've had folks on that was a part of the Jackson Cooperative and some of the fashioners of what they were doing down there. The thing that I want to talk about, because being it is part of a branch here in Philly, is exactly what you're talking about. The political tool that can be utilized in this, because similar to Jackson, Mississippi, or the state of Mississippi, where it's predominantly black, even in northern areas like Philly, Baltimore, Detroit, other cities that have predominantly black populations and predominantly black neighborhoods, we can control the politics in those areas. The plan that they utilize there and other black independent parties that we have interviewed on Time for Awakening is establishing a set of planks and platforms that candidates that are generated will have to follow. You're right that these black elected officials that we have in Philadelphia and nationwide, not just Philadelphia, nationwide, right, don't follow any planks and platforms that the community establishes for them. In fact, there's no apparatus necessarily to establish, put it this way, it's no apparatus that the people know about that are not involved in any type of movements as yourself. It's no apparatuses to establish, to hold these elected officials accountable. Other communities have it, and they make sure that black politicians fall in line. What we have to do to change the politics in our communities is establish planks and platforms. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel, because a lot of these groups that you're talking about, like the Jackson Cooperative, you have the New African People's Party out there in Pittsburgh. You have the Regime Party in Baltimore. You have the Black is Back Coalition. You have the 1 million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. You have the African Independence Organization in St. Louis. These independent black parties have planks and platforms that they try to establish for their candidates to follow. That's a blueprint, just like you're saying, to utilize here. And what I wanted you to talk about, and Brother Richard can jump in, is talk about how, and you don't have to go point by point, you can just talk generally, how the organization wants to change the political environment here in Philadelphia. Because I think that you had mentioned about the city council in Philadelphia is predominantly black. And I think now with the people going in with 9 votes, with African Americans controlling at least 9 votes of council, they can dictate the way council goes just by the votes. Now, we know, that won't happen, especially with some of the people that's in there now. But they do have the votes to dictate council. And that's a tool that can be utilized. And I want to get Brother Richard in the conversation
I'm glad both of you, because I think that's important to raise what Brother Sabuk raised and what you're raising. Because I think that it's important when you raise, Brother Sabuk, about the People's Assembly.
Exactly. Because
in order to have a real, and you mentioned the question about accountability, I think we all would agree, undergirding that is being able to, especially when we look at Jackson and look at the success of Brother Chuck Way and his son now, who is mayor of Jackson, it is because of the organizing, not the organization, but the organizing on the ground. Absolutely. To get people to participate within this assembly, to be really held to their heart. What are the issues that they feel, believe has to be addressed, and then therefore holding whoever is elected accountable to addressing those issues. So, and the thing I liked, I was just so happened, Elliot, the day that the African what was that at Malcolm X Park where the Philadelphia African Maat celebration was taking place, the Malcolm X grassroots committee was having a community forum or a discussion.
It was a political education session, right? That we will hold monthly.
And which is another important mechanism, because if people are not politically educated to have discussions around the particular issues, again, we wouldn't be able to identify the issues and wouldn't be able to hold whoever we elect. And I think that, you know, again, you know, the point that you make about the assembly being the mechanism which we will identify the leadership that would go for those places. Because if you have nine people in a city council, but they don't really identify with the people and the people don't identify with them, as you said, they identify with the party, it's not. So having a political education component. So it's the organization, the political education part. Expand on how, and you say once a month, but how do you see that rolling out in Philadelphia and at the necessity of that and using the Daxon model?
Well, to go back, and I think, you know, you brothers understand where we're going with this. We see organizing the people's assembly as the key component, the basis, you know, the basic component. You know, we have to go in every black community inside the city and organize people's assemblies that are going to contend with the black committees of the Democratic Party. You know that are contend with the political machinery of the Democratic Party. That's going to bring out people, you know, who historically haven't voted because they know that going out to vote, you know, for this politician or that politician is not going to change their condition, you know, because they don't represent their interests. And it's not that we think, it's not voting that we think is going to change anything for black people. We're not going to free ourselves by voting. But, you know, what it begins is, you know, we have to have a number of different strategies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the strategy in Jackson electoral politics is just one part of that strategy. And the people's assemblies are not just for the purpose of advancing an electoral agenda. You know, there are other aspects of the agenda. You know, but the basis is people's assembly, you know. And I say that because, like, you know, and I'll give an example, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, our people need to, you know, ultimately what's going to free our people is revolution, you know what I'm saying? You know, and when I say revolution, that we're oppressed by a system that ultimately uses, they don't use votes and ballots to oppress us. Ultimately, they got us here through using violence, you know, to oppress us. And when all else fails, when black people get woke and start to move, and that's when they start assassinating us, putting us in prison and various, well, they do that anyway, you know, but these things have a concentrated political purpose when black people start to move, you know, and assert our rights and interests. And I think that's what you see now. You know, we've seen over the last several years, you know, with the resurgence of the black movement, we see the resurgence of white supremacist terror, you know, the active organization, you know, the FBI targeting what they call black identity extremists, but we see the emergence of you know, extra legal groups, you know, groups that operate outside the law with the protection of the law, with the cooperation of the law, you know what I'm saying, to terrorize black people. We see the resurgence of that. We've seen we saw, like, within the last several years, what they call, quote-unquote, hate crimes quadruple, you know, as black people have begun to mobilize and organize, you know, specifically around police violence, you know. So, you know, electoral politics is just one thing. The key thing is the people's assemblies, you know. And I think that if you look in other places, and I use, for example, you know, the Malcolm X grassroots, you know, we see, you know, people hear in the news, you know, we hear about the Trump administration trying to make moves to overturn a popular revolution in Venezuela, you know. And it is a popular revolution that's been going on in Venezuela for about 20 years, you know. And you know, in Venezuela, you know what I'm saying, you know, you've had, it was a movement that started with people in the streets. It didn't start with going out to vote, you know. That movement in Venezuela started with ordinary working class poor people coming out in the streets, demanding their rights peacefully, asserting their rights through any means, by any means necessary, as Malcolm would say, arming themselves, fighting back, you know. Ultimately, you know, they were able to elect Hugo Chavez as the president, right? And we see an interesting thing there, you know, is that elections don't win freedom for people, and they didn't, you know, electing Chavez didn't solve their problems. We see that now, you know, with the U.S. embargo, with the fact that, you know, even though the people have a popular government that represents the interests, you know, they weren't able to complete the revolution by seizing control of the economy, right? They weren't able to see. So it's an ongoing struggle, you know. It's an ongoing struggle. The people have seized control of the political system in Venezuela, but they still haven't seized control over the economy, you know. That's an ongoing process. And so we're under no illusions that elections is going to free black people, you know. But we have to have a strategy for our liberation that uses every means at our disposal, you know. And we believe that, and just like we say that, you know, the basis of that strategy has to be people's assemblies for black communities in America. In Venezuela, they have a similar thing. They call them colectivos. Colectivos. And these are committees that are formed in the barrios where the poor people live, that decide, you know, that make decisions not just around electoral politics, but, you know, basically, you know, distribute health care programs, you know, distribute food, distribute all kinds of resources, organize, become a means for the community to organize, to protect itself, you know, from the enemies of the people in whatever form they might come from, you know. It's basically what it is, these are instruments and vehicles of popular power, and they're not necessarily controlled by any organization. It's for the people. You know, and we see, like, Malcolm X organization, the Malcolm X grassroots movement, the people's assemblies are not, we see it as a vehicle for people's power, that it's not our organization, the people's assemblies, it's for the people, but we advocate it, and we'll organize from it, and we'll, you know, form coalitions and alliances with any group that represents the interests of the people that, you know, wants to build these people's assemblies.
And if y'all won't mind, I'm kind of thinking, because I agree wholeheartedly in what is that people assembly and for looking at Philadelphia, especially those who are looking at and I call, you know, been using, because here at Time for Awakening we interviewed you know, and I like the notion of power. We have to organize for power and sovereignty, you know, our own self-governing mechanism. Absolutely. So, so therefore the process of the People Assembly, I would like, as in Philadelphia, I would like us, those who are already, because I know there's a lot of and hopefully I'm not disrespecting any organizational formation, but there's a lot of micro formations and different generational formations that exist in Philadelphia that are already there, that already know. So if we were able to assemble amongst ourselves and our diversity, I think that that would be a good point in assisting and continuing to develop tactics to, one, develop using political education to develop organizers, because you have to get in to the culture of our particular neighborhoods, our particular people. And I think that the point that you raise is that there are more people who are not participating in the electoral process than are. And those are the people that we should be identifying, but we have to be right there with them to be able to, for them to once again believe that this is something that they should go. So I think that, you know, Elliot, when we look at Philadelphia, and as you said, we've been, you know, we've been organizing, and that's why when the, you know, the African Liberation Independence Day festival occurred, I thought that was a good time to have that political education. I don't know if it was coordinated or not, but just that us being assembled, and if you can imagine if that and those groups, whether it be the UNIA or the this the Pan-African, any of the Pan-Africanist groups or any of the nationalist group, if they we were able just to come together in Philadelphia, and we don't have to give up our autonomy, because we say strategically we're about the same thing, right? And and I think again the clarity of the what that same thing is about power, right? And we recognize that we are powerless if the people who are in these positions, these electoral positions, are in power. My last point on this, you know, the, that is critical to the point of what the Malcolm X grassroots, you know, movement is doing, and that what it's attempting to do in what it's not attempting, but is doing in Philadelphia, is the point of being able to not just organize and not just be about power, but being able to bring together us to really coordinate for the future. And I think for the Time for Awakening audience, what Brothers Sibukwe is bringing up in relationship to, if you would agree with me, you can say if you don't, but the Jackson Raising, the book that Brother Keeley Akua and that book lays out and define what a people assembly is. So if we were just to, you know, for those who are listening now, if they would go out and get that Jackson Rising, then that would be another way to do continue the political or political education part. But I just think that we can be able to, there are already formations who are agreeing about that. We have to come together and can, you know, more than trying to do it in silos, knowing that the biggest challenge that we have is cultivating organizers and getting into those communities and being able to speak in the language of the community, because each community has its own language, its own culture.
That's right.
And if you don't tap into that, you're not going to be able to organize that. I don't care what legitimacy you have as a part of, you know, theoretical or historical point, because Mario Bedelli comes from Philadelphia.
That's true.
You're
exactly right.
What we're going to do, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with our guest, Brother Sibukwe Bambata of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement here in Philadelphia. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. When we come back, Brother Bambata, I've got a question I want to ask you in relation to our political formations here locally, and basically nationally, what we have to do, in your opinion. But when we come back, I'll ask those questions. Again, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. You know what? I'm not prepared to cue up this commercial. I'll kind of ask a couple questions here before we go to break. That'll give me time to kind of get things in order. When we come back, Brother Abumbada, the question I want to ask you surrounds our political environment now. And you already laid out some things that you see from the vision of the organization, what we should be doing. But I want to ask you some questions around the conversation of what Richard was talking about as far as organizing and how you see that happening, especially in our environment now. When we come back, I'll ask you that question, and I want to kind of see how you see it. But again,
sure.
We'll do that after the break.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Yeah. Now, you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and they're all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise.
any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here. You love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back. It's a time for an awakening, and it's Freestyle Friday mode, but we're in conversation right now with Brother Simbikwe Bambada of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement here, the chapter here in the city of Philadelphia. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And we got a call or two on the line. Before I go to the caller, too, Brother Bambada, you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because before we left off from break, Brother Richard asked you about organizing the segments of our community that don't get involved in the political environment of our communities.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I want to talk about the political environment now. You got a guy that's holds the so-called highest office in the land. And I'll use an analogy. You got a guy in office that is a wolf.
Yes.
But you got our people now, and I'll use a segment of our people that want to rally around trying to get a fox to replace the wolf. To replace the wolf. I think the situation should be, we should be rallying in our community to develop leadership where we don't have to necessarily deal, or we can find out ways how we can deal with the fox and wolf, not devise ways where we can put a fox in instead of a wolf. Now, I want to ask you a question in relation to the political environment we deal with now and the guy that's in the White House. This is my personal view, because in my mind, I think we need to be developing strategies similar to what you're talking about, where we control at least the politics in our communities where we dwell around this nation, because we pay taxes, and the money that's generated in our communities should go to our communities, whether it's to develop schools, develop businesses, things of that nature. Right now, we don't control the dollars
Absolutely.
In our community. It goes other places.
Absolutely.
Now, the environment that we have now with this guy that's in the White House, I think, and this is my opinion, I might be wrong, I want your opinion, I think in my mind, this is an excellent situation for our people. Some of our people don't like it. They feel it's uncomfortable. But I think it's great that we have a clown like this that's in the White House talking stupid, developing an environment where these white racists come out from under their sheets and act overtly and openly. I think it's an excellent thing for our people because it might get some of our people to get up off their behind and start understanding the situation that we live in. Now, before I go to our call, Brother Bombada, give me your opinion on that.
I agree with you 100%, man. And I think that what we're looking at is we're looking at white supremacy and crisis all over the globe, you know. And personally, you know, I want to go back. I want to go back a few years, you know, because the thing is that a lot of, you know, you had black people for a minute, you know, thinking that Obama getting elected as the president was going to solve our problems, right? And while Obama was the president, you know, we saw the white population react. You saw white backlash. You saw not only police gunning down unarmed black people like you never saw before in the streets. You saw ordinary white people. You saw, I mean, you get this. You know, I mean, think about this. You know what I'm saying? You think of you know, I'm sorry to use the profanity, you know, but it just, you see any half-ass white boy like, you know, what's his name? The white boy who murdered Trayvon Martin, you know? Any half-assed white boy could come and murder, you know, a 17-year-old black man and go around the country and be celebrated as a hero by these white supremacists, these white ordinary white people becoming open white supremacists. He went around the country speaking at town halls. He auctioned off the gun that he used to murder Trayvon Martin, you know? And so we saw this thing building, you know? And you could predict the reaction, and then of course, you know, Trump in the mix, you know, rallying off of this sentiment, you know. And the other thing is that, you know, you had certain things converge, because the way Trump got elected, of course, if you remember, was not too different from the way Bush got elected in 2000. He didn't have a majority of the vote. They used the Electoral College. You know, the Electoral College was necessary for the victory. He lost the popular vote. The Supreme Court in 2000 pretty much handed the presidency to Bush. But I think it's important to recognize some distinctions there in terms of what Trump represents, you know. And I think what he represents, it's not an anomaly. This is not something that's going away. You know, this is something that's only going to gain in strength. And it's going to gain in strength even if he loses the election. This is not going anywhere, you know, because even if, you know, some Democrat gets elected who ain't going to do nothing for black people, you know, these white supremacist forces going to continue. You know, this whole gun control question, what is the gun control question about? These are all important things. What is this trade war with China about? Even this thing with, you know, Russian collusion, you know, and the Democrats want to focus on Russian collusion. You know what I'm saying? And want to have, I mean, here's the thing. Who is Mueller? Mueller's the FBI. If the FBI comes out as the hero over Trump, we all in trouble. We're all in trouble. You know, what's going on here? And I think we have to sum it up. We have to be able to understand. And I think Trump, the thing about Trump is he puts these questions in clear terms, like you say, you know, because when these demonstrations and people are trying to take down these Confederate statues, Robert E. Lee and everything, Trump came out and said it. Well, if you take down Robert E. Lee's statue, then you're going to have to take down Thomas Jefferson's and George Washington's. And I say, hell yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what does this represent? You know, and I think that there's a
Most definitely. Most definitely. Right? Listen.
It's split within the white world that's always been there. You know what I'm saying? And it's had, this split has, you know, been about different things at different times, depending on, you know, the where the economy is, how it's developed, the basis of it. But, you know, and the split, the way it's articulated now by Trump, even, is that it comes down to, you know, what they call globalists versus nationalists, right? And Trump considers himself a nationalist. Well, who are the globalists? The globalists are the multinational corporations, right? You know, and these are the elements of the white population that want open borders and open markets. They want to be able to do business with China, right? They want to go into China and exploit that cheap labor and make a quick dollar. They don't care about the fact that China's stealing technology, you know, that the China's building its military industrial complex up to contend with America, as long as they can make that quick dollar a day. They don't care that you have all these Indians coming in America taking up all the tech jobs. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't care about it because it's cheap labor for them. Because they don't have to pay for white people's education, and they can make money off white people going in debt, going to college. You know what I'm saying? Owing $100,000 for student loans that they're gonna be paying off for the rest of their life while they're using Indian labor in these tech jobs. You know what I'm saying? They want Mexicans coming over here as cheap labor working here because they know a minority of white people will benefit financially from it and get rich. And that's what they and Bush represented that in terms of the oil corporations. You know, now what is the difference between, you know, what does Trump represent? Trump represents a faction of the bourgeoisie that can't compete. You know, that can't afford to do business in China that way. You know, they don't represent Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, but Trump is part of the ruling elite, but a part of the ruling elite that's losing out. You know, within in the global division of economics and labor, right? And can link up with white people who are losing out in terms of jobs because the jobs are going to China, right? You know, and this is what they represent. They're losing out because, you know, Mexicans coming across the border outnumbering white people. The white population, you know, the white people losing their outright minority. And the culmination of that was a black president. That was something that white people could not tolerate. You know, white people, you know, out of a job, right? White people, you know, doped up, you know what I'm saying, on these new fancy drugs that they got, these pharmaceutical drugs that they got, you know what I'm saying? You know, so they could not tolerate that, right? And so in addition to that, you know, in terms of, you know, this whole Mueller probe, which I agree with Trump, it's a hoax, right? It's a hoax. You know, they knew that they weren't going to find any. Trump didn't do anything with Russia that any other president hadn't been doing. If we remember right, how did Reagan win the election in 1980? You know, that's when the Iran-Contra scandal was going on. If you remember, before the election, when Reagan got elected in 1980, right, the factions of the intelligence service, the CIA, who were supported Reagan, while the Iranian Revolution was going on, right, they were talking to the Iranian revolutions, and they had all those hostages over there. And Jimmy Carter was negotiating to get those hostages released. The CIA made a backroom deal with the Iranian revolutionaries. It even sold them weapons during the process to seal the deal, to make sure that they didn't release those hostages before the election, right? So that Jimmy Carter would look bad and then Reagan won the election. That's nothing. Come on. And of course, you remember that part of the deal, the way they financed the deal, the Iran-Contra scandal, what was the Contra part of it? That they were selling cocaine to finance all this stuff, bringing in drugs to finance all this stuff. So, I mean, in reality, you know, Trump, what Trump is doing, you know, has nothing on to do. I mean, it ain't got nothing on the dirt that, you know, you've seen past administrations do. But what they don't like, and a certain faction of the intelligence community don't like, is this talk about, you know, is the fact that Trump wants to basically establish a different kind of relationship with Russia. Why? Because these elements want to consolidate the white world. What you have is you've had, you know, they understand that the U.S. empire cannot fight Russia and China at the same time. So they're going to have to choose. Russia has a problem with Islamic extremism too, quote unquote, right? You know? You know, and so it, Russia's a so-called Christian country too, right? It's part of the white world. So what Trump and them want to do is bring Russia back into the white world, isolate China, and consolidate, and basically be able to consolidate the white world for a last stand. And this is what it is. This is what Trump, this is Custer's last stand right here.
Let me bring a caller on here. Let's go to 267. 267? 267?
Hey, good evening, Elliot. Good evening, Richard. And I want to say good evening to your guests. At first, I was just going to mention until I heard the brother say something that made all the sense in the world about Trump's a nationalist and he's fighting against the globalists. And he, you know, it's funny because I was listening to a popular sports radio station up here today, and Trump is running an ad on there saying, we're losing our construction jobs. We're losing our tech jobs. And he called it the ABC cleaning the swamp out. And he said, if you want to clean the swamp out of Washington, get those lobbyists that's taking away your construction, your building, and he called it something else. If you want to get rid of those lobbyists and clean them up out of Washington, you have to reelect me. Because other than that, the other party is going to bring in people all over the world to take your jobs, and you'll be secondhand citizens living in this country. So, brother, you said exactly what I heard today about, you said the man's a nationalist, a white nationalist.
Yeah.
And you got white globalists. And yep. I seen it with a company that I used to work for that was out of France. They bought out a very popular product out of this country, and now France is calling the shots. Well, what France has done was close down plants that had quality assurance, American engineers, close all that down. So this man, like you said, he's going to school, he's putting himself in slavery and don't even realize it by going to these institutions that's nothing but robbery, paying them back hundreds of thousands of dollars for a semester. And what happens is they're getting some non-skilled foreign engineer to come over here and basically manufacture parts. I saw it within my own company.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are absolutely right, brother. But, you know, I'm just going to keep it real short, and I'm going to continue listening. But, man, you just, when you say globalist, that made everything so simple, because I saw it happen with a company I just retired from. And then since Trump came in, they started hiring a bunch of, folks from this country, like out of Drexel and this, that, and the other. But if the Democrats get back in there, they're going to get rid of them, and they're going to start bringing that cheap labor and these other engineers from other companies, and where an engineer normally makes about $80,000 on up, they're going to bring these cats in for $42,000 a year.
Absolutely.
I saw that check.
Absolutely.
So you are right, my man. So, you know, I'm going to go back on home. I just wanted to listen to you say that. I said, oh, man, this brother's absolutely right because I see it. So, all right there, brother. All right, Elliot, Richard, I'm going to go back on home.
All right. Peace.
All right.
Thank you.
You know,
go ahead, Rick.
To add that, you know, what you raised, brothers, is the crisis that it creates within the black community, to go back to for the reason why the People Assembly is necessary. Because what we see is the formation of those who, in spite of, and using your power dynamics, because you see that there's a corporate, a black corporate elite that is gravitating to the globalists.
Yes.
You know, and the black population in general is confused on what to do with white nationalists.
Absolutely.
Because we're not politically in control, and we see that our political representation has no ideal because they're so tied to the globalists in reality, in power relationship reality. So that's a you know, interesting analysis of why it's so important to you know, create these formations locally to actually try to come together amongst those of us who supposedly understand the urgency. Because I really believe that, I mean, this weekend, that G7 meeting, that's what they're confronted with.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, in France, I mean, and Italy, just the Italy parties just went, are negotiating, the union negotiating with the ultra-nationalists. The French parties are ultra-nationalists have gained a great hold. And even in Germany, the ultra-nationalists, which at the same time, Bannon has been going around to all of them.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
So the crisis this time is not necessarily the crisis of crack cocaine, you know, it seems. It's truly within us a political crisis, because the black community that is aligning, they have, and we see it in the symbolism of, say, for me, the Jay-Z, right? The question of, you know, now the question again, just like in the time of Nixon, black capitalists and black capitalists, what are their, you know, alignment? That which now the discussion within the black community, and there is a debate at the lower end. Well, do we align ourselves with the popular culture black capitalists, or is they really just looking out for themselves? And we have to really crystallize that formation. I just when you raised that, that's what and Elliot, I just wanted to say, you know, to reemphasize that this formation is taking place because me and brother, you know, I think it was just Sunday, they at Peace Park, you know, Philadelphia, Peace Park.
Yeah, that's right.
Locally. But, you know, unknowing to me, pulled us together to assist in this formation that I think, Brother Sidney, would you agree, whether it's that formation towards that people assembly of already organizing entities. Because Dr. Carl Tone Jones was there. You know, others who are speaking in the same vein. So in Philadelphia, and I think in other cities, this formation is taking place. And that's why I think that is important for the Malcolm X Grassroots Committee to keep emphasizing the need for the People Assembly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the more and more these issues come up in our communities, Brother Bambada, and I think you would agree, the more you see that the voting, now you mentioned about the large percentage, and it's a larger percentage of people, or whether you consider them millennials or whatever, that don't vote. But you can also see that the percentage of our people that are voting in these communities have really no clue to the people they're voting for. They see the image of the people, but they don't really understand who's pulling the strings. I'll give an example. A perfect example is, now, it wasn't an elected office. It was an appointed office. But the guy that just quit, the police commissioner.
Yes.
Now, I have a business where I deal with the black public. The overwhelming majority, 99.9% of my customers are black. So when they come in, they're talking about a lot of different issues. And when this issue comes up, you hear a lot of the majority of the people, oh, man, sorry to see him go. You know, he really cared about black folks. He just, he's that, he's other. And, you know, I'm hearing this and saying, well, wait a minute. Are we talking about the same guy? I mean, are you up on a lot of things? Have you been watching, you know, just cursory? For example, when those men was accosted in Starbucks by the police for sitting there waiting for somebody that people do in Starbucks all the time. When the police went in and arrested them for nothing, he came down on the side of the police.
Oh, absolutely.
to stop and frisk. This mayor that's this mayor that's in office now, he campaigned to the black community on the premise of he was against stop and frisk. But when he went in, he was in favor of stop and frisk. And he appointed a commissioner that was in favor of stop and frisk. This man is a cop first. He's black third. I don't even know whether he's black second. He was black down the list. He was a cop. He was in support of the cops. David Jones. You never heard him say the man that got shot in the back by the cop. The cop that murdered him. The young man that was running for the train to get to the basketball game a couple years ago. Honor student at the school on Broad Street, right at Broad and Vine, the charter school. When the cop grabbed his testicles and injured the young man, we had to go to the hospital. He always came down on the side of the cops until this incident here with the 300 cops. And to be honest, I think he came down on the side of the cops again. Because he had, as a commissioner, he had power to fire all 330-year-old white officers that was on that site disparaging black people and everything else. He had the power to fire. All he did was give them a desk duty for about 30 days or a little more and then fire 13 of them. Which, to be honest, they'll probably, if they don't get their job back in Philadelphia, they're going to go to Delaware County, Montgomery County, and be a cop out there.
Yeah, a lot of them gonna get their jobs back in Philly too.
Well, see, but we got to realize that these people and our people got to really educate themselves politically to what's going on and who's in front of them. These people don't represent the community. They're black. They're in the community, especially when they want votes. But if you look at their policies, who's guiding them, how they're voting in city council, the bills they introduce, it's not in the favor of black folks. Richard was telling me in conversation about the park over there, Malcolm X Park, and how it's an undercover effort, and it might not be so undercover, to change the name of that park because there's whites starting to move in that area from Malcolm X Park. But the some of the community don't realize what's going on. The grassroots community knows what's going on, and they tried to pull the community's coats. But a lot of these members in the community might not know what's going on because their elected officials who are black is not going to tell them what's going on. But in order to change the name of anything in this city, you first have to go to people that's the so-called political power in these areas. So these black elected officials know exactly what's going on in their communities. They don't school the public. They don't school the people that they're supposed to be working for. If I'm working in your interest, everything that goes on, I'm supposed to have what you talked about earlier, assemblies. They're supposed to have assemblies in the community and let the community know exactly what's going on, and they don't. The community always get caught off guard. Whether it's a business that pops up in the community, whether it's construction going on in the community don't know it until they see white folks working in their area, and then they whistle, what's this? What's going on? They don't know. They're the last to know. This has to change, and I know that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Well, go ahead, Richard. You was going to say something.
I just want to raise another point out of the Jackson plan that is a part of the Malcolm X grassroots committee, and that is the cooperative economic system, which is important also. And to this. Can you elaborate from what does that mean from the Malcolm X Grassroots Committee's perspective in the Jackson plan?
Yes, you know, and basically, you know, that's another important pillar, and you know, and we the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, we advancing this concept. It is cooperative economics is a key part of it, but overall, you know, what we're talking about doing is building what we call what's called a solidarity economy. And what does that mean, solidarity economy? You know, the one brother who wrote that JK plan, the Jackson Cush plan, who you mentioned earlier, and is the co-author of that book. Jackson Rising, Kali Okuno. I heard him describe the solidarity economy in an interview, you know, in a way, and what he talks about is that, you know, you got, when you look at the black community, it's poor, it's starved of capital, but you got all kinds of people with skills, you know, various kinds of skills, you know, and as he said, you got people in our community who can fix about anything, who can grow about anything, you know what I'm saying? You know, and combined with that, you know, we need to be involved in initiatives to take control of assets and resources in our community, to organize collectively to do that, take control of plots of land, take control of pieces of property collectively, you know what I'm saying? And in conjunction with the political arm and political movement, built this thing called a solidarity economy, where maybe we don't have, you know, billions of dollars in capital, you know, but through organization, through political power, you know, through the skills that we can organize collectively, we can build a solidarity economy. And maybe we won't have millionaires and billionaires, right, which, frankly, I don't think we need, you know. But, you know, we can build an economic infrastructure, you know, to meet the needs of our people collectively. We can do that, you know. And so, we're talking about, you know, building a solidarity economy. And in Jackson, you know, one of the things that, you know, the Cooperation Jackson was able to do was organize to acquire plots of land to begin urban farming, and that's not a new idea, of course. You know, we see it happening in Detroit, we see it happening in other places, we see it happening right here in Philadelphia, you know, to a small extent. You know, that it's just the question of organization, organizing the people with the resources, you know, organize, being able to fight for different levels of political power, and organizing people's assemblies to pull all of these components together, you know, to build what we call a solidarity economy.
And you know, in that political education discussion we had, a symbol of that was a sister, hopefully you might help my memory, who lived in a part of West Philadelphia, and she was saying on the block now that seeing the gentrification going on, she was saying that in the now this is a block, she's the third generation on that block, which was a solid block. And that the thing that struck me, Elliot, that she said that at one point, because the people on that block looked out for each other in relationship to home ownership, that even as they, one generation got older, knowing that they wanted to keep the people on that block, even, and I think she said a principal who lived in that block, who was leaving, you know, an elderly, she transferred the house to a next generation of person who lived also on that block. So it was if I understand that, you know, the solidarity economy, it wasn't necessarily about, do you have money
That's
to
right.
purchase this house? it was that, now this is right in the, I think the Huey is the school, the block was next to Huey School. Right. So the principal was the principal of Huey who lived in the area. So that was, and they gave another example of when someone who couldn't pay their taxes, I think it was taxes or they were, it was water or something like that, that the block pitched together to help that person pay that water bill so that they wouldn't, so the city wouldn't take it. And therefore, now as the gentrification is increasing the property value and the older generation is leaving, it's creating a friction. But the thing that impressed me, and it speaks to this solidary community, that the process that we're already doing, that to hear that you're talking about three generations, you're talking about professionals and people who are just people, young people who are starting out, and how in a cooperative process has nothing to do with money transfer. It has something to do with maintaining communal and a cooperative kind of relationship that has been going on for over, and if I may have the number, but for maybe about 75 years that area. That is something that I'm taking in what you're saying is what solidarity economy that equals to a cooperative relationship has to be created or can be created.
Yep, that's what we need to try to build, and you know, and we can get you know, we can start. You know what I'm saying? And you know, like you're saying, we don't have to have a lot of capital, but we have to begin with organization and planning, you know, and mobilization of our people, and being able to pull together, you know, the various kinds of skills. We got a lot of skills in our community that skills that aren't being passed down, you know. Skills that are going other places and taking care of other people, building things in other communities, you know. But it's a process of organization, I feel, and you know, like I think we all agree, you know, pulling together and organizing people's assemblies is where we should begin to start, so we can hash these things out, you know. And you know, and you made another point, you know, in terms of, you know, it's always going to be a reality that you have different political organizations, different political philosophies and ideas, and different ways to articulate our problems, you know. And that's just a fact of life, and it's nothing unique, you know. And in fact, you know, we can use that to our advantage, because not everybody and not every group is right about everything. And every, you know, and everybody is right about something, you know. And so it's just a process of, I think, that we need of, you know, pulling together all of the skills, the wealth of political perspectives and views, you know, and being able to mobilize these things to try to get our hands on the political and economic machinery right here in our communities, you know. And I think the time is now. I think it's now, it's do or die, you know what I'm saying. And I think we got the perfect person up here in the White House, you know, to inspire our people to do something.
Well, listen, I agree with you. I agree with you. What Malcolm said, it's high time. It's past time. Malcolm, I think he put it in about four different ways. It's never. What did he say? It's not too late. Maybe I'll try to find that thing so I can play it. But I agree with you. You know, I hear these strategies among some black Democrats as far as trying to get behind a fox to get this wolf out. And, you know, and our people are rallying, you know, to find another oppressor, when we need to be rallying among one another to develop political candidates among our communities that's going to at least address the problems in our communities. It's a tool why this system exists. Because personally, I don't think this system, you know, these people that have brought this system into being believe this system is going to always be here. And I don't believe that. Systems fail.
No, they've been doing it
throughout history. But the thing that's going to be here is our people. We were here before this system was established, and we're going to be here long after it's gone. But what we have to do is prepare our people to move our people forward. So, you know, I believe that these are tools. What you're talking about is a tool that can be utilized, and especially with the minds of our youth, to understand that we have to come up with strategies to move our people forward. Nobody else is going to do that for us.
That's right.
Other nationalities, and you know this, other nationalities don't ask black people about strategies to move their people forward. Whether you're talking about Asians, other Anglos, Jewish folks, none of these people ask your opinions on how their people are going to move forward.
Exactly.
But if you notice, whenever some type of movement come up among black people, they always want to elicit white help to develop strategies to move our people forward. What's wrong with that? There's something wrong with their thinking.
Yeah.
Don't make me laugh now. Y'all don't make me laugh.
Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, Brother, one more question, if y'all don't mind. You know, Elliot, we had a forum, and you know, Brother Spookwe say he comes out of the hip hop generation,
mm-hmm.
and raised the point about Public Enemy, and there are a lot of younger cultural nationalists who don't see, and we've seen in our forum the discussion about not participating in the electoral process. So I wanted to get your view on what is the, how do you see that we have that discussion, recognizing the power of people assembly and recognizing that the electoral process is just a tool. But for those who do come out of the hip hop generation, who are politically aware, culturally aware, but come to the conclusion, and I'm not going to say it's wrong, but come to the conclusion that being involved in electoral process is a wasted effort. Is that a position that you think that should be emphasized, or is there something that you see a way of how to handle that discussion, I guess I'm asking?
Well, I think, I think that people who, you know, our people, I think youth in particular, you know, who are, you know, criticized for not voting, you know, they come to those conclusions for very real reasons, you know? And they're not wrong about it, you know what I'm saying? Because the fact is that, you know, even like, and I use the example, even, you know, you look at Venezuela where you had a, you know, you had a popular revolutionary process vote somebody in power for the people, you know, but still, you know, like I said, they took control of the political system but did not take control over the economy, and they're not going to be able to take control over the economy through votes, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They involved in an ongoing process that, you know, they're going to have to go and seize land, you know, from those landowners, which they've done gradually. Part of the problem in Venezuela, you know, is that the government hasn't moved aggressively enough to do that, you know? There are different reasons why, you know, so I think that, you know, we have to, and ultimately I think it's true, votes are not going free us. Now, it might create a basis from which that we can use to struggle at a higher level, but we're gonna have to go to a higher level. It's just a tactic, you know, and in revolution, you know, you have to use different tactics, you know, but ultimately, you know, I don't think that, you know, voting, you know, I think we agree is not going to free us, but I think that, you know, that's just going to be part of the, that's going to be part of the struggle, is like winning our people to an overall vision of what our freedom has to look like, and you know, and we can debate and argue in these people assemblies, you know, about what tactics to use at any given moment to get from point A to point B, you know. But, you know, I think that it's going to be something that, you know, we're going to have to win people to as part of an overall vision, you know. But I think that, too, you know what I'm saying, in addition to that, I think that in addition to that, a general sense, there has been a general sense that we can't win our freedom, you know? And I think that's another aspect of it, no matter what we do, you know? And I think that you look at it, you know, we've used a number of different tactics, you know? And we might go one step forward. At a certain point, we go two steps back. We end up two steps back, you know? And I think it's created a certain kind of defeatism, you know, that has been in place for a while. And I think that these are things that are going to have to be overcome, you know? But I think the key thing has to be organizing our people, building structures like the people's assemblies, like the solidarity economy, you know, when we can, you know, and we're going to have to build resistance and protest components too, right? And, you know, we're just going to have to use every tool at our disposal. And we have to win our people to an overall vision of what our freedom has to look like, and understand that we're going to have to use a number of different tactics. And, that, you know, and not any one of them are going to be, not any one of them are going to be more important than the other, you know. And I just think that's true. And I think it's true in the sense that, you know, I mean, our movement has had to take up arms, you know. But, you know, we can't defeat this system gun for gun, bullet for bullet, even though we're gonna have to, you know, defend ourselves. You know? But it's a revolutionary movement. You know, when you look at revolution and you look at revolutionary movements, and when you look around the world, and even these places, you know, where you've seen revolutions in you know, in Venezuela, they've been able to advance certain things through voting. But they also, you know, are organized on the ground where communities, you know, are armed for their self-defense and are prepared to defend. You know, and that's part of the thing that you look in Venezuela too, is that it ain't just the army in Venezuela that's protecting the revolution. You got in these collectivos, people are armed, you know, to defend, you know, they're armed to defend the revolution, where to the extent that, you know, the government don't have to rely on the army. And even if the army decides to betray, we saw the army go against Chavez, and we saw the people come out in the streets, you know. And we saw the army split in Venezuela, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, a revolutionary movement is going to have to use a number of different tactics, you know, and I think it's just a matter of us, you know, being creative, you know, and being persistent, and just awakening our people and engaging our people and trying different things, you know, and realizing that, you know, it's going to be a protracted struggle, you know, but we're going to have to find ways of winning tangible victories in the short term and medium term while we stay focused on the overall objective. For the Malcolm X grassroots movement, you know, it's the Republic of New Africa. It's our own independent nation based in what's been historically referred to as the Black Belt South.
Brother Rambada, it's been an interesting conversation with you this evening. I'm going to be calling on you, myself and Brother Richard, because we've been putting on some forums here to get some of our people at least aware of some of the independent black political movements that are active around the country, and some of them are maybe closer than some of our people think. Going to be calling on you when we have some forums to either be part of the panel or to be involved one way or the other. I'll be talking to you about it. But okay. before you go, you made mention of something, and this is a little off the topic, but I just wanted to get your opinion on it, because you mentioned about whether it's political or any struggles, it's always one step forward and two steps back. And you said that's kind of been what's been happening with our people here. I don't know, maybe within the past 25, 50 years, maybe. It's one step forward, two back. But it's always people involved in that one step forward and two back.
That's right.
I think it's necessary to call the people out, especially people that's taken the two steps back, because they're always the ones that the system pumps up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I want to use an example of this thing with the NFL and Kaepernick. Whatever opinions people had of Kaepernick, whether good or bad, the one thing that they can agree on is that the man did the symbol of taking a knee against police murder of black folks, and he put his career on the line.
That's right.
And lost his career.
That's right.
Because he's not a quarterback anymore. And I know that the man would love to be still a quarterback in that league.
That's right.
So just look at him. Now he's out of the picture. Now, the mindset of what he was talking about, white America was totally against.
Yeah.
Whether they tried to change it, saying he was against the flag, he was against the troops, whatever. I think personally, all of what he was talking about was against the flag and against the troops, because all of that bolsters white hegemony. But that's another story. I just want to focus in on him, because when he did that, and then you had other players that went along with it, whether you're talking about Eric Reed, Kenny Stills, a few of the others. But when they did that, white minds was thinking, we got to develop a strategy to counteract this.
Yes, absolutely.
So they use people to do it. Now, one of the most recent ones was Jay-Z.
Yes.
His wife and him was vocal about Kaepernick. I think last year she refused to participate in that Super Bowl as entertainment because of Kaepernick. That's what she said.
Yes.
Now, if you look at what the NFL did. Now, let's go back, because sometimes some of our people might miss this. You had a racist owner or part owner of the Denver Broncos that was part of that Papa John's. He owned Papa John's.
Yes, that's right.
He made racist statements about black folks and some of these blacks in the league. So they figured they better get him out of there. And they did. I think they just got him out on paper. But they put somebody else in his place. And that somebody else was Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Now, you look at that. Let's put that to the side. You look at the quarterback with Houston, Houston Texans. Their owner made racist statements. I think that guy has died since. I'm not sure. That might be wrong. But the quarterback, the black quarterback for that team, Deshaun Watson, was over there in Israel getting baptized. I don't know whether he was Christian or Judah. I don't know what he was doing, but I know he got baptized in Israel. And then you got this stuff with Jay-Z signing an agreement with the NFL and basically saying, well, that taking a knee is dead, whatever.
That's right, yeah.
It's gone. So when you got, and then you got millennial blacks and blacks period, but being that he's from that quote unquote millennial generation, sniping at one another on social media and getting vile about this thing. What do you think? Because here again, our people are being manipulated by other folks.
Yes.
What's your opinion on this?
Man, I think that it's going to be something that is perfect to create confusion amongst, you know, the black community and young black people in particular, you know what I'm saying, for a lot of different reasons, you know, because you're right, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, appeared to be in support of Kaepernick, you know. At least verbally, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, and then you got Jay-Z, you know, in particular, you know, now supposedly on this black consciousness stuff, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know what I'm saying? Talking this black billionaire stuff, and he's been rubbing elbows, you know what I'm saying? With these high power white people for a while, you know, remember, you know, a little while back, he was hanging out with Warren Buffett. And everything, you know what I'm saying, and you know they see, you know, supposedly part owner of the Brooklyn, you know the Brooklyn Nets, you know, part owner now supposedly being, you know, going to be part owner of a football team, and you know our black, you know our people, you know we get confused and get excited to see black faces in high places even when they're working against our interests, you know, and just get confused about it because. We don't know what we want. And a lot of times, we don't want nothing, you know? And it's just, I just think it's just going, we got our work cut out for us, you know?
I like to add the other element to that, Jay-Z, which is interesting because with here, again, in Philly, the campaign with Meek Mills about prison reform. Right.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
When you talk about political prisoners, you know, there is no, you know, and Jay-Z, Meek Mills, and this whole thing about prison reform is also captivating another community of individuals that make that kind of alignment to that two step back that you're talking about.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be thinking this is the way to go.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's another gen. That's not even the millennials. That's from what I'm told, Meek Mills represent another generation, which is under. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, in that popular culture. So when we look at it from a political and, you know, a manipulative, you know, perspective, and trying to get alignment back to, you know, and I like that term, white hegemony. It's like falling right in place.
That's right.
You know, and Richard, you made a good point Sunday about, and you drew an analogy of Jackie Robinson and how blacks didn't come together out of the Negro Leagues and appoint different people to try to get into that major league, the so-called major leagues at the time, that Jackie was chosen by Major League Baseball and Branch Rickey in particular. They chose Jackie. If you look at now, they're making the choosing of these people that they're dealing with. Exactly. Black groups didn't come together. There was no assembly, community assembly, so to speak, among black officials or black groups and say, listen, we want you to go in and take this position or do this or that and the other. You look up and you see a Jay-Z or you see a Shaquille O'Neal. So it's other people, or you see a Meek Mills. It's other people that's choosing. Let's take him. Let's use him.
That's right.
It's other people that's doing this. Right. I seen Meek Mills with Robert Kraft and them. Robert Kraft is old racist owner of the Patriots. He's a Trump supporter and a Republican.
That's right.
So what does he know about Meek Mills? But he was there with him. See, we got to understand, we our people can't be played for fools or played out of position and then, you know, look around when things fall apart and then scramble. We got to be smarter than this. Go ahead.
Because it brings back using that historical moment, because if there was a people assembly and if they would, the people would have had that internal debate and discussion, they would have said, it's to our best interest to maintain the economic infrastructure that the Negro League, even if we want to go when we want to go to see white ball players in white league, but it becomes to our importance to maintain the economic infrastructure, you know, of what the Negro League, what was around the Negro League that supported the business, the job creation, the wealth creation within the Black, if that was taken care of within those people assemblies. But because they weren't, not only did those white owners select Black people because of not having political understanding of the choice, left their own economic infrastructure to support another, and decimated a whole, which took more than two generations to build. I mean, again, hotels, you talk about skilled labor, all those things that were developed, decimated it so that we can be able to participate and say we were integrated, which is not true integration, right? Integrated, more really just brought along to add more revenue to the owners of those white leagues, just like now. That entertainment mechanism that is being brought on, it's just going to bring back. I don't know for real whether they lost viewership or lost participation. I don't know if a whole lot of Black people was going to football games.
No, but they were watching. They did lose viewership. The numbers was down.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
This brings them back, right, and cultivates for another generation. So, you know, and that's because, and, you know, I think it's important to keep emphasizing, without the political education, without the people assemblies, these are the kind of things that hurts us in the future, because we don't have no vision of what our future should look like.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to kind of observe what happens among some of the because you got some of the, Kaepernick is not in the league anymore, but you got some of the men like Eric Reed and them that says that they're not going to stop doing what they were doing. So you're going to, I just want to see whether they're ostracized by some of the men. I mean, I seen what happened last year when they really didn't play it up on the news, although some of the people did talk about it when this Philadelphia team played Carolina and Reed went after Malcolm Jenkins. And it's clear that if anybody was following the issues, why he went after Jenkins.
That's right.
So we got to see, and we could, that's a microcosm of what might happen among in the Black community, because we just can't accept any more of our people just turning coat, and next thing you know, they playing on the enemy's side against the community.
Right.
This can't be accepted. We got to develop strategies against this. Spies in our community, spies among us. And the next thing you know, they're working against. That's what destroyed the Black Power movement.
Right.
That we allowed these people to move among groups. They would decimate a group, maybe have men jailed or killed. The next thing you know, some of these guys will go among another group. They might change their name. They might move to another city, but they're working on another group.
That's right.
So, I mean, these are things that we have to learn from our history and learn strategies against. I was just throwing that out there before you left, brother, to get your opinion on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I want to thank you, brothers, for letting me participate in the discussion. And I look forward to, you know, having more discussions and, you know, working with y'all. And, you know, yeah, let's make it happen.
Yeah. All right. I'm learning a new word. Let's build.
That's right. Let's build.
Brother, thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, then.
Peace.
Free land.
Right.
All right, free land.
Richard, interesting discussion with Brother Zimbukwe. And I'm looking forward to working with him. I didn't know him prior to, but I know that you kind of move around in different groups and organizations, and you were familiar with his work and him. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting to know him and maybe doing some things with him in the future.
And it's just important for us to continue to emphasize that in our communities, these formations exist. And what they're calling for is us to participate. And I'm saying us, and I'm using myself as the example, us, and what Sister McKinney says, us who's sitting on the sidelines whispering as the leaders are getting, the true natural leaders are getting whipped.
Yeah.
And
what I like, I mean, he said that he's from another generation. Jay-Z and them, that's the generation he's from. So when he's talking, right, like he's not talking as an elder, as an older person, he's talking to a generation that needs to hear him,
right,
and hear what he's doing, hear what he's about, and why. And that's another thing. These elected officials don't tell you what they're about, and they don't tell you why. They barely give you any information of what they're doing. That's what keeps them in quote unquote power. But you know, more and more we hear some of these men and what they're doing, we're gonna come up with strategies now. It's not a lack of that, but it's just a lack of getting people to participate. You heard the brother tonight talk about the need to get people active and out there. So
yeah,
you know,
I see that happening too.
Let's go grab one more call before we wind it up, Richard. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot.
How are you?
How you doing, my brother?
Great.
Hey, Brother Richard, how y'all brothers doing tonight?
All right now.
Praise be to Allah. I'm glad y'all doing well. I enjoyed the conversation, Brother Elliot and Richard, with our brother just now. Interesting conversation, you know, very, 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 very productive interview. You know, I don't say these things before I go, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know, I think it should be clear to us, no matter how some of us want to have that integrationist attitude and stuff, but some of us is determined to have, come hell or high water, we want to integrate with this so-called open enemy. In light of what happened here in Philadelphia the other week with the standoff with the police, it's clearly, when you hear the comments from these white racists, whether it be from law enforcement or politicians, whatever, it's clearly us against them. There's no get. You can sugarcoat it. You can shake it, bake it, any way you want to shake it. It's us against them. I don't know if you and Brother Richard have heard about the brother Shaka Johnson, who was Maurice Hill's attorney. And I heard the brother on terrestrial white station today, this morning, because they're going to do a thing on him on the news station over the weekend.
Joe, before you continue, just for our listening audience sake, when you said Maurice Hill, because you got other people listening, they might not know, just let them know who the Maurice Hill is.
Oh, Maurice Hill was the individual to the time from the weekend listening audience that listened around the country. He was the individual that was involved in the shootout and standoff with the police a week ago here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem, Brother Elliot. And anyway, Shaka Johnson, who was his attorney, now I didn't know Shaka's background. This is a very distinguished brother, Brother Elliot and Richard. This brother, I didn't know he was a former police officer himself.
Yeah.
And not only a former police officer, but he was a member of a SWAT team. So this brother come with the credentials. But the point I'm making, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, he said on this terrestrial white station how since he helped get Maurice Hill free, he said the white racist been coming at him. He been getting death threats, and he said he feared not only for his safety, but he said he feared for the safety of the staff at his law firm. He said they have to open up stuff now with gloves, with envelope, you know, with gloves and these protective measures. He said because people in his office is afraid, and rightly so. He said some of the hateful, vile, racist epithets he been getting and stuff, saying how dare you let this in, help get this in, but he shot out officers and all this kind of stuff. He said the hatred been just astounding. So I'm saying to myself now, it showed it's the sickness of white America, because you know yourself, Brother Allen, Brother Richard, white boys shoot at cops, white boys and in some cases kill cops, and they bring them out alive. I'd never forget over in Jersey several years back here where a white boy shot and killed two white cops over in Jersey, and they had the SWAT team, everybody out there, and the white police chief out there. Even the reporters were saying, well, ain't y'all going to go in and do something because he done took out two officers? And a white police chief said, no, we not. He said, we're going to wait him out. He said, we're not going to have no more bloodshed. You hear me, Ellen and Richard? We're not going to have no more bloodshed. We're going to do our best to end this thing peacefully. And a white boy wound up surrendering. He was a transvestite. He wound up surrendering. It's just amazing. And there's been other cases and stuff, too many to talk about.
Yeah, well, they had the one here up in Pennsylvania where the guy killed two state troopers. And he was in the Poconos for over a month.
Yep, that's right. And they brought him in alive.
They knew where he was. I mean, they could have smoked him out. They just waited him out.
Exactly. But they made sure they brought him in alive. But yet this brother and stuff, they upset because they didn't get a chance to kill him. I mean, to show you the sickness of them, because they had brought in they understand the sickness of this white racism psychosis. That's what Dr. Francis Press Wilson was saying, the sickness of this white mind. They had brought a sharpshooter in, because they was going to take this brother out. Now, if you see, it wasn't going to just end there. They was going to show that the sharpshooter could have got a head shot and took him out. But it wasn't going to end there. They was upset because they wanted to riddle this brother's body with bullets. Those racist white cops out there wanted to riddle his body with bullets because they want to get that bloodlust up. But like I said, none of these same white cops, if it's a white boy shooting at them, they still somehow show the compassion, his humaneness and stuff. But when it's a black man or a Latino, the hatred comes to the surface and stuff, you know. And see, this should let our people know what we up against, the kind of sick mindset that we as a people deal with and stuff, because these people are sick. And the vile hatred for our people is not getting any better. It's not going to get any better. It's going to get, as a matter of fact, I dare say it's going to get worse, especially with this occupant in the White House and the flames, the continued attacks on the two Muslim sisters in Congress. I mean, this is going to get even worse. So it would behoove us as a people to, like you said, Brother Allen Richard, understand what we're dealing with and continue to organize. Like we talked to Brother Shetway a few minutes ago, organizing and have like-minded people, because we up against it in this country, brothers. And this is no joke. Our very survival is on the line. This is no the sky's falling chicken little. These people are serious. That's why these white boys buying all these guns and stuff. And it's like I always say, I'm not a hunter and I'm not a gun person, but I do know my dad, when God rest his soul, he used to hunt, and my uncles, they didn't never use no AK-47s. When they used to hunt deers and rabbits, they used to use just a rifle or whatever. These people got automatic weapons, AR-14s, AK-47s, military-style weapons. Who the hell you think they buying them weapons for? They ain't buying weapons just to kill Bambi and stuff. They buying them weapons to kill black folks. I mean, this is real, brother. And the United States government, as they always are, they're complicit in this. They sitting back because they know what time it is. They don't mind black people being slaughtered wholesale because, like, it's just the same government. They dropped the bomb on our people not only in 1985, back in 1927 down in West Tulsa, Oklahoma. So, I mean, we see clearly the mindset that we up against. That's why we better get our act together, because this is real. And I close with these last two comments, Ellen Richard, on the Jay-Z thing. See, once again, like you said, these traitors, and I know sisters and brothers mean well, but I've been heard terrestrial radio stations, some sister brothers calling up saying, well, you know, give him a chance because maybe this is his way of trying to be the spook that sat by the door. And I say to myself, Ellen Richard, none could be further from the truth, because see, like you said, Brother Ellen, you always got to watch things. Like you always say, Ellen, that's the smoke screens. Because like I said, I'm not ashamed, Brother Richard, to say I disagree with Brother Elliot on Malcolm Jenkins when he first was out there with the fist, you know, holding up the fist. I disagree with Ellen. I said, Brother Elliot, I'm giving the brother the benefit of the doubt. And Brother Elliot said, Brother, I smell a rat. He said, I just smell a rat with this guy. I just, something don't sit right. And I was still sticking. And it turned out Brother Elliot was right, Richard. I mean, Malcolm Jenkins turned out just to be the fraud and the sellout that he was. And I said the same thing with Jay-Z. Now you know why. When you put the pieces together, when things fall into place, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, you see why. Because you have to ask yourself, why were these rich white Jew boys like Robert Kraft the Sixers owner, and all these other rich, powerful white men, why would they give a damn about Meek Mill? I mean, other brothers been in jail. I'm sure right up there in the Boston area where Robert Kraft is from. His brothers have been victims of injustice. So why would he? What's all this is thing about with Meek Mills? I mean, and when a brother got out of jail, they gonna fly him a helicopter when he got out of jail to the Sixers game so he could hit the Liberty Bell. So you ask yourself, where are these rich white Jewish people showing so much love for this black man? Now, and now you know with Jay-Z being a protege for Meek Mills. Now you see now with Jay-Z making this deal with NFL. Now you see the payoff now. See, because these white boys calling their markers now. See that? See this whole thing was this closing up the Meek Mills, this kid, because Jay-Z knew all along that was part of his thing to get with NFL. Because at the end of the day, not that he needed the money, but he just showing his true colors that he wasn't able to capitalist sellout to begin with. So all this love for Meek Mills, so-called love and care for Meek Mills and justice reform from Robert Kraft and the Sixers own and all these from Roger Goodell, nothing but a bunch of BS. And nowhere near, and it's a thing with the NFL, did you hear J.C. mention about Kaepernick, for Kaepernick getting a job? Not that Kaepernick necessarily needed, because he got plenty of money from the settlement, but it's the principle of the thing. So you see clearly, like you said, we got to be on the lookout for these sellouts in our communities, whether it be a Jay-Z, whether it be a Malcolm Jenkins. We got to call these people out and stuff, because like you said, LA, they do damage to our people. Now granted, Jay-Z may not, or Malcolm Jenkins may not did what these Negroes did back in the day, where they would cause a brother to, you know, doing COINTELPRO to get killed, or but their movement still helped to stabilize our people, because too many of our people still look up to these guys as some kind of activists in the community, if you will, and doing well, and looking at them as being activists and having goodwill towards our people when it's actually just the opposite. You know what I mean, Brother Ellen Richard?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we see clearly we got to definitely hold these people accountable and stuff like that, because they number traitors and stuff, man, and stuff. Well, sister, it's funny how I close with this, Ellen. A sister told me about Jay. She said, "Joe, I don't trust it." Even back when him and Beyonce was out there with the Black Panther thing back when on the Super Bowl video, whatever it was, she said, "Joe, I don't trust that nigga." She said, "I don't trust him because he number the capitalist." She said, "At the end of the day," and she said, "Think about it, Joe. Why are you?" She said, "Do you honestly think these white owners, and even though they got no." You know, people like Robert Kraft, you see with his stuff with the sexual environment and everything. He said, they know choir boys themselves. He said, but do you think they want to be associated with a guy like Jay-Z? He said, here's a guy that's, according to them, he's a former drug dealer and all that kind of stuff, that he just happened to be forced to make it big in the rap game. But they don't want to be associated with him. He said, they'll use him for their means and stuff like that, because he's a useful tool. But they don't give a, they don't want to be associated with Jay-Z. He said, Jay-Z got any ideas about getting stock in NFL teams, that ain't gonna happen either. He said, because they don't want to be associated with him, you know, and for real. And I said, you're right. I thought about it. I said, you make a good point there. So we see clearly how they use these Negroes to play games with our people, and you have our people fall for the okie doke every time. And that's why it's important, Ellen Richard, that we have shows like this to keep our people informed, because like Dick Gregory always say, information is powerful, especially when you have the right information. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Thank you for your contribution, bro.
Thanks for that. Thanks for the Richard. Peace.
Hey, listen, yes, before you leave us, maybe you'll get an opportunity tomorrow to ask your favorite guy, what is his, when is he going to make a strong statement in reference to these women that's getting attacked by a 45? I don't want to hear all that old weak talk, you know, mealy mouth, Mr. Farrakhan says in that statement there, people don't want to hear all this compromising talk.
Right.
They want to hear some strong talk, because this other guy makes strong statements.
That's right.
Israel made a strong statement. You're not coming over here unless you sign. They always like putting these agreements in front of black people, and some black people sign the agreements.
Except for Sister McKinney.
Yeah, like him. He signed it. Now, that's just me saying that, you know.
And so did Shaka before him. So did Shaka Patel. Like I said, they only replaced one handkerchief here for another one. Shaka's in jail doing his 10 years for his despicable deeds. But like I said, at the end of the day, they only be placed by because Shaka was just as bad. If Shaka didn't do what he did, he'd be the random handkerchief head being a patsy for Israel. And last point, Ali, you put up the minister said in the final call, he said it's a disgrace that these black men in Congress don't have a heart. He said these sisters show them backbone. Rashida Tlaib, Omar and all them, they show them backbone. They standing up uncompromising. He said they know what the black men need to do. That's why I say, you as a black man, and Richard, you as a black man, and Ali, me as a black man, we should be ashamed of these Negroes. I mean, here you are, a black man in Congress. You know the history of Israel. You know they don't have no love for black people. Like I said, you can go all the way back to Moshe Dayan, the former prime minister. His racist remarks about America would be better off if they didn't have all these Negroes in America. His racist vile remarks. Netanyahu, the racist rabbi over there that called black people monkeys. And by the way, Ellie, just for point of clarification, and this is important because people need to know, Minister Farrakhan said it best. He said, the so-called righteous Jews, they practice the Torah. The wicked Jews, the Zionists, they practice the Talmud. And remember that Jewish rabbi that called black people monkeys, and when he got blowback, and this is a fact, they say all you got to do is check out the facts, speak for themselves. When he got blowback, even from the Israeli media, he doubled down by saying the Talmud justifies him calling black people monkeys. So the minister's right on point what he's saying. The so-called righteous Jews, follow the Torah, the so-called, the wicked ones, the Zionists, if you will, they follow the Talmud. That's all you need to know. And again, these Negroes, cowardly Negroes, and they get me started on South Africa, the support for South Africa over the years, where they were supplied weapons for the apartheid regime, the murder our people, our men, women, and children in Sharpeville, Johannesburg, places like that. The damn government of Israel, the same Israel that's supposed to be an ally of the United States, they're fired. I understand this, Brother Richard. People need to know this. They fired on a USS Liberty warship in 1967, killed I don't know how many white United States sailors. And I never get the white sailor who just wasn't going for the okey-doke. He said, I'm not. He said, I go to my grave. He said, Israel knew that was us. They fired intentionally on their own ally. He said they could see the big American flag wave. And you can't miss a flag, Ellie. It was waving big. He said we were sending all kinds of signals. Don't fire. This is us. He said, Israeli is. Fired on them anyway, their so-called ally. And don't forget Jonathan Pollard. Remember him? Spying. He spied on the United States for Israel. Their own government was spying on the United States, their so-called ally. Spying on them for years. And he got sentenced to Ronald Reagan. I think during the Reagan, he got victim, got life in prison. But Netanyahu and the Zionists over there, they cried and bitched so much that finally they let the creep out of jail back here several years ago. Spying on the United States. He was American Jew. Must take dual citizenship, spy for Israel on the United States. I mean, they're some great friends over there in Israel. They love the United States. They only killed several hundred sailors in USS Liberty. They only spied on their own allies. They're some great allies and friends. I love them guys over there. They're very nice people over there, as Trump would say. Very nice people.
Brother, thank you for your call.
Thanks, Brother Elliot. Peace.
Right. Bridget? Coming,
yes,
up, come up on the end of another program. It's interesting discussion that we had tonight, period.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And, as you say, showcase what's going on in local levels that is happening all over. I think we should keep an eye on Detroit. There might be something interesting coming out of Detroit in relationship to what I'm saying, sovereign thinking and sovereign and looking towards sovereignty in September. So and see how that plays out. And you know, yes, it's, you know, the formation is just.
Well, you losing me. What about Detroit?
They're just they're going to be pushing that perspective of declaring sections of Detroit as independent zones using the United Nations legal authority, if I got that right.
Is that Malik Yankini?
Malik Zulu Shabazz is tied with I think it's called the United Nations the Afro-descendant Coalition. Which is, you know, creating a political thrust, using the laws, the international laws out of the United Nations charter.
But I think that's Malik Yankini that's doing it, a lot of that farmland over there in Detroit, that urban farmland.
Well, that's, I think, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at the article.
And you said Malik Yulu Shabazz is involved with it?
Yeah, he's involved with the Missouri brother I was saying I was trying to get in touch with.
Okay. He didn't. So maybe I can get Malik Yulu Shabazz to come back on and talk about what you're talking about, because the other brother he didn't respond as of yet. So we'll see. We'll give him another opportunity. Maybe I'll reach out to Brother Malik Yulu Shabazz, Attorney Shabazz, and see if he'll come on and talk about it.
Right, but that's going on in Detroit. So September 11th, that's supposed to occur.
You know, there's something else going on in Detroit too, Richard. Depending if we don't have a guest Sunday, if we're in open forum, it's a couple of things I want to bring up that's going on in the Detroit area. That's interesting.
Oh, okay.
That our people need to keep a scorecard. You know, I'm going to take a page from, I'm sorry.
Mary Mason.
Yeah, take a page from Mother Mary Mason. Yeah, when she used to always harp on keeping a scorecard.
Right.
I'm sorry. Keeping a scorecard on these folks, because it's really necessary that we kind of understand what's going on. So, if we don't have a guest Sunday, we're in open forum. It's a couple of things I want to bring up just for discussion purposes, and then see what you think.
Yeah, and that's out of the Afro Descendant Institute of Human Rights, that process of declaring the territory a sovereign space. So Black people can take over the, it's a whole legal international law thing, but it's out of that, utilizing the process of the Afro-Descendant Institute of Human Rights.
Okay.
Mustafa Asari.
All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. If we
children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.